With that, we would move to Friedman, 57245. Both counsel are present this morning. Once counsel is settled and ready to go, you may proceed. Mr. Willick, you're up.
May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice, Justices. Marsh Willick appearing for Daniel Friedman, a resident of the state of California. This writ concerns the most basic of legal principles, that of subject matter jurisdiction. The relevant facts are straightforward and completely uncontested. Both parties lived in Nevada when the divorce proceedings were filed. The mother and the child left Nevada before the divorce was granted. The father moved after the divorce. For a year, both parties and the children lived in the state of California. The mother then filed a motion in Nevada seeking to alter child custody.
Mr. Willick, can I ask a question? And going through this, I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. So when this divorce was filed, neither party lived in Nevada?
No.
Okay.
That's not accurate.
So she was living in Idaho, he was living in Nevada.
At the moment of the decree, but at the time of the filing of the divorce decree, divorce complaint, everybody lived here.
Okay.
She moved during the pendency of the case, before the completion of the action.
All right.
The UCCJEA specifically says that if you have jurisdiction at the beginning of an action, it continues even if everybody leaves during the course of the action. So that's not the relevant facts to this case. The relevant facts to this case have to do with CEJ, modification jurisdiction.
Right.
What happens if, after the entry of a final order, everybody leaves the state?
What about the Idaho portion?
Okay.
The Idaho portion. Who lived in Idaho? Who moved to Idaho?
I'm sorry.
Somebody moved to Idaho?
It wasn't terribly relevant to the legal issues, but mom and children moved to Idaho temporarily. They then moved to California. By the time the motion that's the subject of this action was filed, everyone had been in California for a year. So Idaho is just not relevant to the jurisdictional analysis. I didn't spend any time on it. I don't have those dates, but they're not relevant to the analysis. The UCCJEA is now the law of all 50 states, and it states that it regulates subject matter jurisdiction. Now, this court has repeatedly held that if subject matter jurisdiction is lacking, then there is a jurisdictional defect of the fundamental type where there is an entire absence of power to hear or determine the case. That's the situation here. The language will probably sound familiar. Under NRS 125A.315, Nevada law CEJ, modification jurisdiction, when all of the parties left the state, the official comments to the UCCJEA say that if any court anywhere determines that the children and both parents have left the state before the modification proceeding is filed, the analysis is over. That state simply has no jurisdiction to modify the custodial order. The court below in this case made that finding of fact, that everyone left Nevada a year before the modification motion was filed. That should have been the end of the inquiry, but it wasn't. Subject matter jurisdiction either exists or it doesn't exist. It should never be a matter of being subjective or conditional, or maybe just this once, as my opponent suggests. That was the point this court made in Rivero when it said, district courts can use their discretion to make fair determinations in individual child custody cases. However, this becomes unfair when different parties similarly situated obtain different results. Such unreliable outcomes also make it difficult for attorneys to advise their clients and for parties to settle their disputes. For jurisdictional rules of uniform application to mean anything, they have to apply to everybody, including the rich and powerful.
What about this issue of estoppel, though, that Judge Ritchie got into? I think that's the crux of it. I think we all know what Rivero says and the general tenets of law. Is there any type of under estoppel, whether it's judicial or equitable estoppel? And if
not for
so,
subject matter jurisdiction, Your Honor. I have researched the matter comprehensively. There are 44 decisions in the state and federal systems where people have had questions of subject matter jurisdiction, and the question is whether the parties may, by agreement of any kind, decide to convey subject matter jurisdiction when it's lacking under the relevant controlling statutes, and the answer uniformly is no. Mm-hmm. Under the UCCJA, which this court knows from the split opinion it had in Swan, had a lot more subjective qualities to it. The cases are almost essentially uniform around the United States. The parties cannot, by agreement, convey subject matter jurisdiction where it didn't exist. The difference between the UCCJA and the UCCJEA was to make that absolutely airtight and irrevocable. That's why the cases disappear after 1998. Once the new statute was in place, district court judges stopped trying to do what was done here.
Now, Judge Ritchie talked about the Vail case and and I think you were involved with that case.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the issue of the complaint, the jurisdiction of the court and then judicial estoppel. It's not custody and all wasn't the issue here, but what's your position on that? Why did he err in referencing Vail and his conclusions of law?
Well, I can't answer the question why he erred. I can suggest that he did err. What was the question in judicial estoppel in the Vail case was personal jurisdiction. The question was whether Cicely Vail, having signed the answer, had admitted that Scott was a resident of the state of Nevada when, in fact, that wasn't true. And that was the hook that the court used to find that the court had ostensible jurisdiction to grant the divorce. But in that very same case, the court said that the agreement that both parties signed, saying that Nevada and only Nevada would have jurisdiction over child custody to modify it, to enforce it, to change it, was null and void, had no effect. In Vail is in here, the parties had entered into an agreement saying that Nevada, a state which didn't have jurisdiction under the UCCJEA, would have jurisdiction under the UCCJEA, and this court properly said that the agreement was void and unenforceable.
Well, but it's not unusual for, certainly in the federal system, taking it out of family law, for parties to settle a dispute and provide for the court to retain continuing jurisdiction to enforce the terms of the settlement. That jurisdiction continues as supplemental jurisdiction, even if, say, diversity was destroyed because they had moved. And I think that's the argument that your opponent is making, is that because there was jurisdiction at the time the decree was entered and the agreement was incorporated into the decree, that the parties agreed to have the court continue to have authority over enforcing that settlement agreement. Could you comment on that?
That is the argument that was tried in the eight cases tried in the 80s and the 90s under the UCCJA that are uniformly overruled by the state Supreme Courts. There is no contrary authority.
Because statutorily you have to renew jurisdiction at the time you come in to modify, correct?
The jurisdictional test is at the moment of the filing of the modification proceeding, and subject matter jurisdiction at that moment either exists or it does not.
So you're saying the statute simply trumps the party's capacity to contract away the court's jurisdiction
exactly.
over
That's
child custody?
That's note two. It should be noted that since jurisdiction to make a child custody determination is subject matter jurisdiction, an agreement of the parties to confer jurisdiction on a court that would not otherwise have jurisdiction under this act is ineffective. It says so right on the face of the comments of the act itself. The Nevada legislature, in enacting the UCCJEA, had it say that it is the exclusive basis for determining the jurisdiction of a court to entertain a child custody proceeding.
Could you comment on your opposing colleague's argument that mandamus jurisdiction is inappropriate given the possibility that something more could happen in California?
I'm not really sure I understood that argument when it was made. My opponent's legal team has made an appearance in California asking that court to please hold off making any determination until this court renders its ruling. They have convinced that court to stay all proceedings, waiting for the ruling in this case.
But
sorry, did I answer?
No. What I'm interested in, the argument is being made that that makes it inappropriate for us to exercise mandamus because it may not be necessary. Something may occur in California.
The fact that something else might happen, I mean, people could die. I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen that would make this court's further proceedings moot. That's what happened in Cuisenaire. But that doesn't remove the jurisdictional impropriety of the district court action that I'm asking this court to address. This court should mandate that the court below dismiss the underlying motion as being outside the subject matter jurisdiction of the Nevada court. And that should happen no matter what a judge in California does. Yes, the California judge could even decide that state, which is the state with jurisdiction to decide this action, is for some reason that I can't fathom an improper forum. It could choose to defer the case back to Nevada. But that's not Judge Ritchie's decision with respect. And with respect, it's not your decision. That is the decision for the court with subject matter jurisdiction only to make. Only that court can decide that it is an inconvenient forum to hear a case and choose to send the case elsewhere. No other court can make that determination for it.
Could you briefly comment on Mr. Standish's argument that our recent Southern California Edison case equity requires a district court to honor the contract rather than the Uniform Act and the NRS provisions?
I really don't see the proprietary application of that tax case to this instance. The UCCJEA is essentially airtight and is supposed to have uniform rules of application. It's not a matter of choosing by agreement. If you could yell judicial estoppel every time one team of lawyers managed to convince the other team of lawyers to sign off on an illegal, unenforceable, improper document, then we would have a lot more enforcement of illegal, unenforceable, improper decrees. That isn't a justice system that we should wish to have. The rules should apply to everyone, no matter the skill of their underlying counsel, to get the other side to agree to an unenforceable illegal provision. And the court should not enforce those unenforceable illegal provisions. There really isn't much else to say about that. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time, if I may.
Thank you. Mr. Standish?
Good morning, honorable members of the Supreme Court. I'm Thomas Standish, representing Kevin Wynn in this proceeding. Appreciate the opportunity to orally argue this matter to the court. As the court has already pointed out in its questions to opposing counsel, this is a matter of equity that I am before you on today. The equity concerns my client, Kevin Wynn's actions, what she has given up, and what she has done to obey a court order that contained the provisions that are being argued over here today, and whether or not you're going to allow, by inaction, Daniel Friedman to take full advantage of the agreement under the court order that was issued by the 8th Judicial District Family Court. Allow him to take advantage of all of those things that she did and then come before this court and disavow both the agreement, the order, and all of the provisions of those documents.
Mr. Standish, enforcement of an agreement versus subject matter jurisdiction, how do we weigh that from your perspective?
Well, under the UCCJA, Justice Sata, that I would... if I could leave to the second part of my argument, it is complicated. I do not believe, in summary, in capsulized form, that Mr. Willick's argument that subject matter jurisdiction automatically ceases is the entire analysis. In other words, I do not believe you can pluck provisions out of the UCCJEA that apply to your case without considering the facts that lead procedurally to that particular interpretation of the rule.
I would certainly allow you to make your argument in the order that you choose. My follow-up question would therefore be, under your analysis, will you please also tell me how it is then that you would deal with this hypothetical? I enter into an agreement with my soon-to-be former husband regarding our children. We agree at the time, because we are both residents of the state of Nevada, that everything set forth in our agreement is going to be the way it is. We agree, or we confer upon the court this forever jurisdiction, which appears to be a part of the agreement here. And then we promptly leave the state, and 10 years later, we decide to come back, having both established residencies elsewhere. Would this be a hypothetical that would be entertained under your view of the facts? And if so, do we want to allow that in our court system?
No, it would not be a hypothetical that is applicable to this case. And no, you would not want all of those cases to be able to go that way in the system. The difference in this really is this. At the time the order was entered that embodied the agreement of the parties, the court, counsel, and the parties all specifically contemplated in the words of the order in the agreement that both parents might eventually leave the state of Nevada. Kevin Wynn was leaving the state of Nevada. She left contemporaneous with the settlement went to Sun Valley, spent the summer there. The decree was finally entered in September. The agreement had been reached much earlier in the summer. And she remained in Sun Valley until such time under the terms of the agreement and the specific court order.
Did she just go for the summer or did she move there?
No, she moved there permanently before the decree was entered. And the decree states that.
Did Mr. Friedman know that she moved to Idaho?
Pardon me?
Did Mr. Friedman know that she moved to Idaho?
Yeah, it was an integral part of their agreement that she would move to Sun Valley. But if he was to get full-time employment in Los Angeles, she agreed and it was ordered that she would move the children from Sun Valley and permanently relocate to Los Angeles within a 50-mile radius of him. That was the agreement. And the court specifically considered that. Under your hypothetical, Justice Sata, I agree that would lead to the condition that Mr. Wilk is trying to argue, that there would be chaos and anarchy, people would be running wild in the streets, and there would be no order to it. That is not what we are suggesting. I am suggesting that the facts of this case are so extraordinary that judicial estoppel, under the holding of this court in Southern California Edison and the Noam LLC case as well, that this case meets and exceeds all of the standards for judicial estoppel. It is an extraordinary case. It does have extraordinary facts. I do distinguish it from the hypothetical that you just gave us.
But counsel, we're dealing with a fundamental issue of court's jurisdiction, not just the will of the parties, but the parties appearing before the court of the state of Nevada. And what gives the individual this right to alter the jurisdictional basis?
The jurisdictional basis, Chief Justice Douglas, is not being altered. There is no question that both parties left the state of Nevada, as again, it was contemplated in the order specifically. Under the bare reading of NRS 125.815, it would appear that continuing exclusive jurisdiction has been given up by the state of Nevada if you follow only that section. What I would argue to the court, however, is that that section is not It does not cover every eventuality. There are gaps in the thinking of the Uniform Act in that regard. For example, what Mr. Willick is saying is that at the time that both parents leave the state of Nevada, if you look at subsection B, it states that's the end of the court's jurisdiction. But that is not necessarily so. There are exceptions to that fact pattern. The fact pattern that would clearly constitute an exception, for example, is that the father in this case, for example, has left the state and the mother has packed up the children and their belongings and is moving to California. When that moving van drives over the state line, does California have jurisdiction? Absolutely not. That is why subsection 2 of 315 states that if the court attempting to modify and assert jurisdiction has initial jurisdiction or would have initial jurisdiction, then they can still rule.
But counsel, the case law seems to talk about what was done starts a new proceeding, so to speak. But I guess my real question is, Mr. Willick indicated he searched the case law to see if there was something that would allow what you're asking for. The question I have for you, did you search the law and what can you give us that would uphold your position?
Well, the 44 cases that Mr. Willick is referring to, Your Honor, I guarantee don't have this fact pattern, the extraordinary lengths to which one party did to comply with the agreement and the court order, which specifically contemplated her giving up that consideration.
Do you have any case authority you can give us that might be close?
Well, yes, your decision in Southern California, Edison, Your Honor, would be that authority.
Well, counsel, if just for argument's sake, if we deem it does not apply, where do you go to then?
Then I would say to you, Your Honor, that my example of the moving van is not included in 315. In other words, there are exceptions to when two parents leave the state that the home state would automatically give up jurisdiction. And that's what was contemplated by this court in Las Vegas at the time the decree was entered, that if both parents leave the state, that in consideration of Mrs. Wynn moving from Idaho all the way to Los Angeles, that there would be continuity in terms of what Mrs. Wynn could expect from the court that would make decisions, the lawyer she could have represent her, the family contacts she had in that place, the efficiency of the courts enabled to deal with that. In other words, all of the factors of the Noam LLC is exactly what was contemplated by the judge at the time the decree was entered, with all of those future acts being contemplated as well.
When the deal was struck, did she give up the right to come back to Las Vegas, to come back to Nevada? In other words, she moved from Idaho to California, saying, there's a deal here. I'm living in Idaho, but I'm going to move to where Mr. Friedman is, as long as he gets employment. Is that is part of the deal that she wasn't going to move back to Nevada, that she was going to move to L.A. to be so the children would be near their father?
If he secured full-time employment, yes. She was bound to move to Los Angeles within that 50-mile radius. So she gave up eventual Idaho jurisdiction. She gave up child support as part of this deal. She gave up the right to stay in Sun Valley, where she had been raised, an idyllic small town, to go to a major metropolis. She gave up all of those things and complied with the specific court order that contemplated all those things, and now is being told you can't have Nevada jurisdiction. That is the essence of judicial estoppel in this case.
Mr. Stanch, let me ask you one procedural question here. This is up here on a writ proceeding here. Writs are discretionary if we decide to entertain them or not. What would happen procedurally if we didn't entertain this writ? Where are we at?
Well, if you did not prematurely enter the writ, Your Honor, which it is premature, then the UCCJEA provisions would have to be followed. In other words, the California court has a basis. They have a mirror image statute to ours. It's just different code section and labeled differently. The California court would have to make a decision under 325, NRS 125A 325, that they had initial jurisdiction, or the equivalent of it, and that there was a proceeding in another state, but this was the more appropriate forum. At that point in time, the communication under the Act between the two judges takes place. Then if Judge Ritchie determines that he will not relinquish jurisdiction, at that point in time would be the appropriate time for either a writ or an appeal of that decision. Right now, the California court, yes, has stayed its decision, obviously wondering if this court will act, but the California court is not bound to stay its decision. It must, in fact, act if it thinks it has jurisdiction.
You do not dispute, though, that Judge Ritchie found that plaintiff and the children have resided in the state of California from at least September 2009.
Exactly. In other words, Mr. Friedman waited. He wouldn't have a problem with Idaho jurisdiction, Justice Pickering. He was protected by the order, and he took full advantage of that. She could never shift the case to Idaho.
But all parties were in California, and Judge Ritchie so found, and you are not contesting that.
Absolutely. That is what happened.
Once you have that read literally, the Uniform Act applies, and California is the state that should first assert jurisdiction, correct?
If you only read the literal words of 315, yes, that would be correct.
Is there any case anywhere in the United States under the UCCJEA that credits your argument that there is an exception to the plain wording of the statute for facts like yours?
Yes, the Headley case that was decided some time ago, which we quoted in our supplement, Hendry from New Jersey, had the similar facts where both parties had moved to another state, but they felt under the Act that they would not relinquish jurisdiction. That is, we have quoted that and supplemented our response with that case.
Is there any other case, or is that the entire?
Well, the cases that would support the analysis of the court, which I believe is part of the path of interpreting the UCCJEA under the section 365, the inconvenient forum provisions, I would say those cases in the annotations support the argument as well. In other words, the two criteria under 315 by which the court is to make its determination are both expressions of inconvenient forum. Where a court makes a determination in A, it states that there is no longer substantial evidence regarding the children's training, education, and so forth, and B is when both parents have left the state. Both of those provisions contemplate inconvenient forum. There are gaps in 315 and places where 315 would not apply to the facts. Therefore, I have asked the court to consider under NRS 125.365, where the court is to make a determination regarding inconvenient forum, the statute is clear. Before making that determination, the statute states, the court should consider the following factors. And one of those factors is the agreement of the parties. This court considered that. Judge Ritchie considered that. That is 125A.365, subsection 2E. Why would they have any agreement of the parties as to which state should assume jurisdiction is a big factor that the court shall consider in determining inconvenient forum. And this court did so from the very beginning. That is why the facts of this case are extraordinary in two respects, if none other. Number one, the court specifically laid out the factual pattern that actually developed where both parents would leave the state. And the court considered that as part of the agreement that would be binding on both parties. Those facts are different. And the other extraordinary fact, of course, is this lady moved her children from a small town in Idaho all the way to Los Angeles. That, I would argue, under judicial estoppel, is the most compelling consideration that anybody could possibly have. What benefit could Daniel Friedman or any other person on this planet receive that would be bigger or better or more compelling than having your children two blocks away for the rest of their lives, conceivably, instead of 2,000 miles away in Sun Valley? He took advantage of Sun Valley never becoming, Idaho never becoming the home state, because she contracted that away and obeyed that under the order.
So that was a specific agreement that nothing would be litigated in the state of Idaho?
Correct. Nevada was to be the continuing jurisdiction, and California was to be the resident of the residence of the children when he moved there and got a full-time job.
Could you comment on your argument with respect to 125A, 365, paragraph 1? The lead-in to that is, a court of this state which has jurisdiction pursuant to the provisions of this chapter to make a custody determination, et cetera, can look at inconvenient forum. But the threshold inquiry is, does this court have jurisdiction? And the argument from your opponent is that under 315, it doesn't. How do you resolve that congruity between the statutes but incongruity with your argument?
Well, if you choose to interpret the statute, Justice Pickering, as saying that you need not go beyond 315, then Nevada does not have jurisdiction. I would allow that. I would commit to, however, a follow-up consideration, which is the judicial estoppel. I mean, can you, with these facts and this consideration, actually let this gentleman receive the benefits that he's received and then turn around and disobey not just an agreement, but a court order that embodied that agreement right from the beginning? That is the question before the court. I have no time left, but I would ask the court to simply consider the factors in your Southern California Edison and Nolan LLC decisions for judicial estoppel and assist my client and her children in that regard. Thank you.
Before Mr. Standish sits down, any additional questions?
You know, just out of curiosity, I do have one more question. What is the big benefit of having this resolved and having jurisdiction in Nevada for either or both parties?
Well, for my client, Your Honor, it was the idea that, A, she would not have litigation over the situs of the case. I guess that didn't work out real well for her. That she would be able to maintain the same counsel if she wished, that she would have the convenience of being just a few hundred miles away with a court that would always have jurisdiction, that we believed this court would be more efficient in terms of dealing in the Family Court of Las Vegas rather than the much more crowded calendars of Los Angeles, and that child support would be done under Nevada law rather than California law, with which we were not familiar, and a host of other considerations along those lines.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you. Mr. Ulrich.
Frankly, my opponent misspoke and answered one of your questions, Justice Pickering. The case that he cited was decided under the UCCJA, not the UCCJEA, and is an anomaly. I didn't burden this court with the host of citations standing for the non-anomalous proposition, but I will tell the court that California 92, Pennsylvania 98, New Mexico 95, North Dakota 91, Georgia 93, Missouri 98, Colorado 83, they are all the same. His hypothetical occurs all the time under the UCCJA, that parties contracted to remain with before a state and then everybody left. And all of those cases, and if the court wishes a supplemental brief, I'll gladly provide it, although it's not specifically applicable because the statute has changed. All of those cases say you can't do it. You cannot do it. Once everybody leaves the state, you're done. 315 is absolute on its face, and no, there are no gaps.
So could she move back here?
She could have.
Could she move back now, right now, like tomorrow? Right, could she pack up the kids and move back to Las Vegas?
She can, but it won't affect the jurisdictional analysis because the snapshot occurs at the moment of the proceeding. And the proceeding was filed in, I forgot the exact date, but basically 9 or 10, 12 months ago. And at that moment, everyone lived and had lived in California. That's the snapshot, and they're stuck with the jurisdiction at the moment the jurisdiction applies.
It sounds like what Mr. Standish was saying, which she had to move to California. She had no choice. In other words, once employment, that was part of the deal. Is it a deal or is it not a deal?
But it may have been part of their deal, but it's also an unenforceable provision. There's no such thing. I mean, she couldn't have filed for any relief in Idaho while he remained in Nevada for the same reason that California is the only state that has jurisdiction now. Because under 315, he was still here. Nevada retained CEJ, modification jurisdiction, as long as he remained here. As soon as he left, the UCCJEA, which is airtight and absolutely clear, dictated the rights of the parties. She could have filed something in Idaho if she had chosen. And the result would have been exactly the same as I'm trying to get this court to say has to be true in California now. Doesn't make any difference what they agree to. One, unlawful provision. Two, three, they don't get to make private law. The UCCJEA applies to everyone. And at the moment, irrespective of the creativity of their counsel and crafting it, applies to everybody equally.
Now, Mr. Willick, if we decline to exercise our jurisdiction to entertain this writ, would there be chaos? Or what? Mr. Standish gave a scenario of what would happen with the conferences with the judges and all this, but you've had a lot of experience in that. What would happen next?
What would happen as a practical matter is that the California District Superior Court judge would end up with the question of going forward to invoke the jurisdiction that he clearly has. And Justice Pickering, you were exactly right on. That 365 stuff, that's all for that court. That court can determine, well, these parties signed some agreement in Vegas 4 years ago that says that they want to litigate there. And what's that court going to say?
No jurisdiction.
Mom's here, Dad's here, the kids are here, all the facts and all the evidence are here. Why should I send these people to go litigate in Nevada? That is the uniform result in all those other cases I was just talking about. Every single appellate court that has made a decision has made that decision. There is no conflicting authority. And Justice Peregrine, I respectfully submit that the answer to the question that you asked, why is this case here? It's because of the perception, real or imagined, that somebody named Wynn will want to be in a Nevada court. That reality is the only reason this case is here. Poor people don't get to say that we want some other court, some other place to decide. But the law should not be different for the rich and the poor. I thank the court.
Thank you, Mr. Willick. Thank counsel for their arguments this morning as to this interesting area of law. This matter will stand submitted. We are now in recess.